cyanide detectors, right?
Yes.
Right. And Randy Jackson is here. You're a doctoral student working on this project. And so tell me a little bit about your research.
So our development has been going on for the last 4 years or so. And just recently, within the 3 years, we've come to the point where we have a cyanide diagnostic that we can hopefully translate into something in the industry or the medical industry. And so the idea there is to be able to take like a blood sample from a finger prick, like something you would do with like diabetic testing. And so the idea behind the sensor is to take that blood, analyze it within a single cartridge, and then so your sample prep, analyzation, all happens within the same cartridge within an instrument. And so the idea there is to produce or go through this analysis within 1 minute. And so we would like to have an on-site rapid analysis for cyanide diagnosis. And so...
Okay, because the problem is that right now the diagnostic testing takes 24 hours.
At a minimum. So that depends on the analysis that you use.
Is that a blood test?
Typically,
also?
It is blood.
Okay.
Blood or plasma they sometimes use, but it's typically blood.
Right,
and
but
you
the
send
rub
off
comes,
this,
yeah.
You send this out to a lab, and then you have... you know, wait time or lag time. So the problem with that is the cyanide exposure can kill you within 5 minutes if it's extreme.
That's the problem.
but typically you have like a 30-minute window to provide an antidote or anything. Some type of therapeutic mm-hmm. to this. So the goal is to be on site with possibly the emergency response teams, maybe the fire department type teams, right. Or even right in the clinic at the ER so that you can attest immediately and you have a sure answer saying, yes, you have cyanide exposure. And if you don't, you can move on to something that would, you know, go to the other testing.
A different diagnosis, a different, mm-hmm. Okay. So does the anecdote harm you if you don't have cyanide poisoning?
It does not. However, it's one of those things you get charged for diagnosis. And
okay.
Then again, if it's not that, you...
Yeah.
You've still got to go through all these other testing to see what the problem is. So
what does it look like? Is it a small thing? I'm thinking like a diabetic testing.
So the cartridge is approximately an inch and a half by maybe half inch thick, just okay. The way that it's set up. But the actual instrument is no bigger than probably like a Kleenex box. So that's about how big the instrument is. And so it's very portable. And again, you can have it with an emergency response team or, you know, or just
right.
Sitting on the lab bench there. So
right. And what I was shocked to learn in doing my homework for talking with you is how common cyanide is.
Yes. It's
or poisoning can be if there's a fire.
Mm-hmm, yes.
So explain that part of it. How common is cyanide?
A lot of the plastic materials that you use, and synthetic fibers contain cyanide. So burning those plastic materials or carpet from the house or some of the paints for coloring use cyanide as well. So you can see that a fire in a house could actually be cyanide exposure versus carbon monoxide poisoning. The problem there is carbon monoxide poisoning and cyanide poisoning have the same symptoms. So you can't distinguish between the two without actually having a cyanide diagnostic.
What are the symptoms?
You'll have kind of a higher heart rate, you slower breathing, it's the smoke inhalation symptoms, you know, you feel weak, you can't really move, your motor control's gone. And then higher exposure levels, you immediately go to a coma. So you stop breathing, you exhibit those coma-like symptoms, so you're unconscious. And so again, a real quick non-invasive finger prick for an analysis is something that could, you know, definitely save somebody's life, especially if the analysis is within 1 minute. And so typically right now, if you're exposed, they don't know. It's based off of, let's give them the antidote because we think maybe there was cyanide present. So there's a lot of issues there that, you know, we could hopefully solve, or problems that we could solve and maybe even save lives in the long run. So,
okay. So this is, how did this come about to be developed here at SDSU?
My advisor is actually very prominent in the cyanide and chemical warfare agents, metabolites and therapeutics and those kinds of, I guess, that industry. He's very well known with the analysis and being an analytical chemist in that field. So it just kind of fit hand in hand with the projects that we've been going and working with. So it just kind of, I guess it's always kind of been something he's been interested in as far as cyanide metabolites and the metabolism or figuring out therapeutic diagnostics and things like that. And also, this is the one of the main diagnostics that we are working on. Mm-hmm. However, we also work on, being able to test how efficient the therapeutics are that they're developing. So there's one side where we wanted to directly detect cyanide exposure, and then there's the other side where we want to see how well do the therapeutics that we're developing work. So we do analytical method development for that type of those types of analytes, those types of exposures, I guess, as well too.
And the Department of Defense is interested in this. Is cyanide used as an act of warfare?
Yes. Yes. it's been used, dated and used back in World War One, World War Two, World War Two, especially in the gas chambers. The thing with cyanide is it's really potent in contained areas, so fires are a big issue.
Sure.
Again, it's like it's not necessarily, always the illegal use of cyanide that you really need to worry about, because there are 1.4 million pounds or tons of cyanide produced a year for making synthetic fibers, electroplating and mining use cyanide. So when you look at like a population map versus where cyanide is being used, it's really close to where the population is.
Sure.
There's always those issues of a freak accident that, could happen when in the transportation of cyanide, or who knows. But it's more common than people tend to know.
Oh, so you have this device, you have it built, and you have it down to 70 seconds, but you're 10 seconds too long. I just read that. Is that really a goal? You want to cut an extra 10 seconds off?
I say yes, because the faster it is, the better.
Okay.
Again, you have that 1 minute, and so let's say there's a mass exposure event. You would like to be able to test as many people and say yes, you're good, or no, you're not good.
Sure.
Within a allotted amount of time. So that helps limit, you don't need 500,000 instruments here. You can have, slightly less if you can get more analysis through those instrumentation.
Okay, so where are you at with, you have it built, it's been tested, is it ready for market, or or is there more testing that needs to happen?
So at this point, it's ready to transition into market. So again, with even with like her medical stuff, we would have to go through FDA type approval and things like that, because it's going to be, the idea is to have it as a medical diagnostic.
Okay.
So you have to go through those channels to actually get approved through the FDA. So there's a few years worth of work still kind of, in front of us. So right now we're just finalizing and making sure that the instrument's ready to go through those stages. And so it depends on how funding works out and stuff like that to help move it towards something that's more of a manufacturable prototype. So,
how do you get volunteers to test this on?
Because
I'm not going to sign up for it.
So typically, what would happen with this is you would go through, like, we would use a rabbit model to understand and do the initial analysis of the sensor. And then when you go past that, the next model would be to use smokers and non-smokers. And then also you can get people that were exposed, or samples at least, for people who were part of, had smoke inhalation through being near a fire and within a fire, things like that. So we can test without actually having to expose humans, which is not going to happen.
Okay.
So.
I see. Okay. Well, I wish you luck. And this is, again, something that I look forward to following as you get ready to take this to market. And is this a device for you as a student that you want to see all the way through? and start the business, or are you looking to do other things?
I would like to see this through as far as possible. I actually was awarded my PhD this December.
Congratulations.
And so it's the transition to market that we're kind of focusing on, and you know, again, wrapping up the tests that we need to do with the sensor to help, I guess, strengthen its chances at becoming a medical device.
And you've been working on it how long of your educational career?
So I've been working on this for 3 years.
Okay.
Maybe a little bit more. That's when I took it over, and so we're hopefully getting close to that transition from academia to market.
All right. Randy Jackson, thanks. I appreciate it. Thanks for taking time and coming on Innovation. And when we come back, we're going to hear about a sociological study that's happening here at SDSU, looking at community attitudes toward wind farms. You're listening to Innovation on South Dakota Public Broadcasting.